And one more thing, it's Thursday night. It's time for our weekly tribute to the FCC, where we bleep and blur things, whether they need it or not. It is This Week in Unnecessary Censorship.
All I could think of was one thing, and that was you f***ing me off. Every single night, you f***ing me off.
Whatever Chris Jericho does behind closed doors is his business. I don't need to know about any of that. That was freaky. This is episode 208 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, Anything But Freaky, here on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, March 4th, 2012. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you, as always, for downloading the podcast or streaming it or whatever you may be doing it. By whatever means you may be accessing it, I thank you for that. We start off today with some sad news. We learned yesterday that Doug Furness, who competed all over the world, most notably in Japan, and who also had a run in ECW and WWF in the mid-90s, with his tag team partner Philip LaFon, also known as Dan Crawford, passed away in his sleep at the age of 50. He had been battling Parkinson's disease for some time. I'm not sure if that played a role in his death. I think it might have. But he was certainly battling that for several years. WWE actually gave him and his partner the Boring label during their run there as a tag team. As a matter of fact, I linked to a video they have on their own YouTube channel where Furness and LaFon are specifically listed as one of the most boring tag teams in WWE history, but they were anything but boring in Japan. If you want to see a great tag team wrestling match, you can go on my Facebook page and check out the link to the match with Crawford and Furness against Kenta Kobashi and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi from All Japan Pro Wrestling in 1992. I posted a link to that. It is a tremendous match with an uncharacteristically loud Japanese crowd. You don't see too many crowds in Japan that go nuts like some American crowds do. Usually they're a lot more reserved, they're a lot more respectful, but they were going crazy in this match. And it's proof that while they may not have been in their physical prime by the time they came to WWE, I'm not saying they were the most exciting, most charismatic tag team, but by the time they got to WWE, they had been wrestling in Japan, for example, for many years. And that is not an easy style to keep up. But they certainly deserve more respect than they received, as far as I'm concerned. I was actually on YouTube watching a classic Japanese women's match between Akira Hokuto and Manami Toyota, and someone actually linked me to that tag match, so you might want to check that out. Speaking of classic women's matches, that leads me into Strikeforce. Holy shit! Is all I can say. What a fight last night on the Strikeforce show between Rowdy Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate. After watching those slow motion replays of the finish of that fight, I am going to have nightmares for a week. Yeesh. Rousey was undefeated in MMA and an armbar assassin, as Mauro Ranallo called her on commentary. And she submits the champion, Misha Tate, in what was Tate's first and only title defense, as it turned out. It ends in the first round with one of the sickest armbars you'll ever see. I mean, this... It's got to be a broken arm, at best a dislocation. And Rousey is the new Strikeforce Women's Bantamweight Champion. She now has 5 first-round armbar submissions on her resume. This girl just goes around breaking arms like it's nobody's business. She's got a great gimmick going with the legendary Judo Jean LaBelle. Yes, the same Jean LaBelle for which Daniel Bryan's LaBelle Lock is named. He's always in Rousey's corner timing her fights with a stopwatch. And she had never gone longer than 40-some-odd seconds, I think 46 seconds in a fight or something like that. This one went about 4 minutes or so, but still, just awesome, awesome stuff. And then during her post-fight interview, after breaking Tate's arm, presumably breaking her arm, I don't know that for a fact, but she gets on the microphone and she says, you know, she's legit, she's the real deal and everything, but I don't feel that bad about it. This is the definition of a money promo right here. Then Misha Tate got interviewed. She actually was standing there with her arms at her sides like nothing ever happened, and she got interviewed. And, you know, give the girl credit. Again, she got her arm messed up pretty badly, and she just stands there and says, it just feels a little sore. Just a little bit. She hates Rousey so much, she simply could not find it in herself to show any weakness in front of her. I know that I think she skipped out on the press conference after the fight, and they took her to a hospital. And you can go on my Twitter, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. I posted some images of the armbar, and it's pretty graphic. I just warn you, if you are perhaps of the faint of heart, you might want to turn away. It was hard to watch, but it's like a car crash. You know, You just can't turn your head. You have to watch, even though you don't want to. Just gruesome stuff. And, you know, the hatred between these two women is such that they refuse to even touch gloves before the fight. This is legitimate hatred. I mean, really bad blood between these two women. This is not a put-on. This is not an act. These are two women that do not like one another. And, you know, Rousey even said before the fight, you know, in the hype and everything leading up to it, because I guess Miesha Tate is actually married to, or maybe not married, but she's in some sort of relationship with another MMA fighter. And Rousey says she would kick Tate's ass and her boyfriend's ass. One down, one to go, I guess. So, anyway, yeah, the one thing that struck me watching this, it's almost like, you know, you're like a eureka moment. It is possible, whether it's wrestling or MMA, it is proof positive this fight is, that women's matches can be exciting. I mean, I really was looking forward to this fight, and it delivered in every conceivable way. The only thing is, it's just that pro wrestling shits on the women so badly, you can't possibly get invested in it. You know, it actually makes me angry just thinking about it. It's been 6 years since I gave a shit about any women's match in WWE, that being Trish Stratus and Mickie James. Do you believe that? 6 years. I watched that fight last night, the build-up, the promo videos, the very real hatred exhibited by both women towards one another, the fight itself, the post-fight interviews, everything about it clicked. It was awesome. On the flip side, I'll put Raw on Monday night, watch the Divas prance around to the ring, botch a couple of moves, and then 30 seconds later, it's over. And then Natalya will fart. And they wonder why their ratings are tanking lately. I'm not saying the women are the reason, but you know, it's how they've condition their audience not to give a shit about their product. It's just amazing. They need to watch this Strikeforce show and take notes. Study how they built this up. Apply it to the Roxanna feud. Or better yet, just steal Ronda Rousey away from Strikeforce, and every time one of their writers comes up with some really bullshit idea, let Ronda put him in an armbar. If TNA had enforced such a policy while Vince Russo was still employed, he'd have stubs for arms right now, and he would have been gone a long time ago. So, if you missed the fight, watch the replay, download it from somewhere. Even if you're not like that big of an MMA fan, you owe it to yourself to watch it. It's just really exciting stuff, and it's really exciting to see, you know, a women's fight get the headline spot and get as much attention as this fight did. I mean, I haven't been this excited to see an MMA fight in a long time, and I couldn't even tell you the last time I was excited to see a women's MMA fight, because you really don't have that many women top level. Like big stars. You know, Gina Carano was a big star, but now she's making movies, and you know, if she knows what's good for her, she'll stay out of the ring, out of the cage. I mean, why go in there and get your face bashed in when you can make movies? But it just really struck me watching this last night. It's just another reason how MMA, in some ways, is doing pro wrestling better than pro wrestling is doing pro wrestling. And it shouldn't be that way, because again, pro wrestling, you have the ability to book it any way you want. You can make it as good or as shitty as you want. And why they choose to go the latter avenue as opposed to the former, I just don't know. But again, catch a replay of it if you didn't see it. And if you are squeamish, well, man up, you wuss, and watch it anyway. It's totally worth it. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday night. WWE. On the road to WrestleMania, I thought the Raw did a fine job of building two of the top three matches at WrestleMania this week. If you are a fan of wrestling, there was probably too much talking on the show for you to really like it, but I liked it. You know, much of the show was actually pretty average, let's be honest, but it was sandwiched by some tremendous promo work, and it made it a thumbs-up effort in my book. And for the people complaining about all talk and no action, why so many interviews, why so many video packages, it's the way things are going to be for the next 4 weeks, so just get used to it. I'm going to do a more traditional review of the show this week, segment by segment, starting with the opening promo. Chris Jericho and CM Punk. I love this. These two guys, you know, may end up stealing the show at WrestleMania, quite frankly, and they've been totally overshadowed on TV by Roxanna and Triple H Undertaker. This was their coming out party in a lot of ways, and while the segment, I mean, it probably went about 5 or 6 minutes longer in reality than it needed to be, they took those 20 minutes they had and in one fell swoop got me more excited for their title match than at any other time in the build-up up until this point. The gist of it was that Jericho called Punk a Chris Jericho wannabe, said that everyone steals his stuff, he's the last of a dying breed, which, by the way, I find that very interesting. You know, we're seeing a pattern here of older guys from the old guard, Jericho, Triple H, Undertaker even to some degree. I don't know that Rock has really said anything like this, but all these old guys coming back and talking about how we're the last of a dying breed and this and that. If I didn't know any better, it almost sounded like they were setting up for some sort of new generation versus old generation type of feud, which I'm sure they're not. But it gets me kind of excited thinking about the possibilities. I mean, if you had, you know, Jericho came back, Triple H is back, Undertaker's back, Rock is back. If somebody like Austin came back or I don't know, somebody else, they could set something up where, you know, maybe they are out to prove that, you know, the new generation, the new crop of guys isn't quite up to snuff. And you can build this feud over a couple of months with those guys against, you know, John Cena, CM Punk, Randy Orton, well, not The Miz, but you can come up with one or two other people and really build this old versus new feud. Again, I have absolutely no insight into whether or not they're going to do that. I'm sure they're not. But Jericho is not the only old star, so to speak, who has made comments about how, you know, we're the last of a dying breed and all this. And I'm just thinking outside the box here, thinking if they wanted to go in that direction, that would be a hell of an interesting idea to see the old guard against the new guard. But in any event, Jericho talked about Punk being a wannabe. And as I predicted, back when those End of the World vignettes first started airing, remember they talked about, you know, when she beckons and people thought, oh, well, Stephanie McMahon is going to come back with Chris Jericho and all these obscenely asinine theories. Jericho said here he came back for one reason, to win the WWE Championship. And I always figured, you know, the she that was referred to in those vignettes was not an actual female, it was the WWE Championship. That's what I took from this. He didn't outright say that here, but I've argued from the start that that's what his motivation was all along, and I was right. And Punk was great here, too. He said Jericho was jealous. He didn't need Chris Brown, just like Jericho doesn't need Mickey Rourke to each prove who the best man is at WrestleMania. It'll be the best in the world against the best in the world. And I will say that as great as Jericho was here, I did think he was too repetitive in saying how he was the best in the world at what I do. He must have dropped that phrase no less than 7 times, and it got very old by the end. I had the same problem with Rock's promo later in the show, when he just seemed to be repeating himself in some places. You know, it got very annoying. But other than that, I would not have changed a thing about this. It did hit me, though, and I don't even watch Raw in HD, but it hit me while watching this how much older Jericho looks facially. I mean, obviously he's over 40 now, and he's still in tremendous shape for his age, don't get me wrong, but you look at his face up close like that, and you can really tell. We then had the third installment of CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan, and I would be totally fine if they just went and did a best of 7 series with these guys, just like they did back in the day with Booker T and Chris Benoit for the WCW TV title. Just a good, solid wrestling match that unfortunately, once again, had a fuck finish with no decision. Teddy Long and Johnny Ace were arguing on commentary throughout the entire match. This was what I did not like. You have your third champion versus champion match in 2 weeks. It's the third time now they're facing each other. And it is nothing more than a backdrop. It is background filler. While the announcers spend the bulk of their time moderating the Battle of the GMs. It's just ridiculous. David Otunga was also at ringside, as was Santino Marella. Yeah, I looked over and there he was, inexplicably standing there outside for no reason whatsoever. They got involved at the finish. Referee got distracted. Bryan went to leave. Sheamus ran down to the ring, threw Bryan back inside, right into the waiting arms of CM Punk. Boom! GTS, 1-2-3, match over. But wait, here comes Mr. Excitement himself to nullify the decision. I don't think he reversed it, because I don't think they ever announced Bryan as the winner by DQ, so I guess it was just a no contest. Teddy Long got in the ring. He ended up shoving Johnny Ace on his ass and walking out. The fans were into this. I have no problem with the storyline, but don't do this shit at the expense of making both your world champions look obsolete. You know? Punk walked back up the ramp. Jericho came back out, attacked him from behind. He ended up putting him in the real Walls of Jericho, where he really wrenches down on the person's back, not that half-assed Boston crap he's been using the past couple of years. So it ended on a high note, I guess. But again, I don't like the idea of Punk and Bryan. And look, I know that they don't view Punk and Bryan, or Bryan at least anyway, on the same level as a Triple H or an Undertaker or a Rock, nor should he be. I mean, those guys have been around for many years, and they've established themselves, and they happen to have matches at WrestleMania, and they're going to get top billing. I get that. but don't put your two world champions out there in their third match when you've already had two indecisive finishes. And the entire fucking time, the whole match is about, you know, Johnny Ace and Teddy Long bickering like a bunch of little schoolgirls on commentary. I don't like that. By the way, we found out the next day on WWE.com that the board of directors has announced that this upcoming week, John Laurinaitis will be in charge of SmackDown while Teddy Long will oversee Raw. Jack Tunney is rolling over in his grave right now with all this BS. Kelly Kelly beat Nikki Bella in a terrible match. Not much else to say about it. John Cena beat The Miz in a WrestleMania Rewind match. Well, they didn't call it a WrestleMania Rewind match, but they should have, since that's exactly what it was. Think about that. This was our WrestleMania main event 1 year ago. Easily one of the worst of all time. I mean, it's up there with Undertaker vs. Sid and Lawrence Taylor against Bam Bam Bigelow. This match was not much better, not for Miz anyway. Cena basically beat him like a jobber. Attitude adjustment into the STF. Miz taps out, match over. Before the match, Miz complained about being mistreated. He vowed to somehow make it onto the WrestleMania card. After the match, off the air, Miz complained some more, and Triple H came down to the ring to deliver a pedigree and calmly walked back to the locker room. I'd say this was a burial, but how do you bury someone who's already 6 feet under? He is clearly on their shit list right now. Mine too. He's just become poison on my screen. They just got to do something with him or just get him off TV, because putting him out there every week looking like a fool is not going to do him any good. Then we had the only good match on the show aside from Punk vs. Bryan, which was a triple threat tag team championship match featuring the champs Primo and Epico, who desperately need to come up with a tag team name for themselves. They were against Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger. So the U.S. champion is back on Raw. And their other opponents here, new best friends, R-Truth and Kofi Kingston. I have no idea what the two of them have in common, other than the fact that they're both black and they both had dumbass white guys as partners up until recently. Rules here were that you could have any three guys in the ring at one time, and again, I thought this was a damn good little match. Kofi nailed the Trouble in Paradise kick on Swagger, Primo snuck up for the backstabber, and Epico swooped in for the pin. So the tag champions retain. And at that very moment, I was actually impressed. I mean, WWE made these guys look strong. They won the match. Not bad. And then out came Kane. And, well, so much for that. He came down. He killed almost everybody at ringside, including the tag team champions, and left them laying. Then he set off his pyro, and he left. Why do this when he was coming out the next night anyway at the SmackDown tapings to attack Randy Orton and kick off what I presume will be their WrestleMania feud? Why they did this, I don't know. I mean, was this really necessary to have Kane come out and kill everybody, and then the next night he kills Orton? Why couldn't he just come out on SmackDown and kill Orton? I mean, Kane hasn't been seen since the Elimination Chamber. Shouldn't he have just showed up on SmackDown and gone after the man that he wants to challenge at WrestleMania? This was stupid. They showed the trailer for the latest WWE film, this time starring Edge. It's called Bending the Rules. It's never a good sign when they show a trailer for a comedy and you don't laugh one time. I am sure that Edge is fine in this film, and I'm happy to see someone other than Triple H or John Cena in a WWE movie for a change, but this does not look funny at all. It doesn't really matter anyway. It's going to have one of these one-weekend releases in theaters and then go straight to DVD. But, yeah, it doesn't look like a winner to me. Eve Torres came out to cut a promo. I was not a fan of this. I like Eve as a heel, and I think her acting is better than people give her credit for, but this just reeked of fake forced wrestling promo to me. I enjoyed her one-minute YouTube rebuttal last week to Zack Ryder a hell of a lot more than I liked this. They should have just taken that video off YouTube and just put that on Raw. That one actually felt more realistic. This just seemed ridiculously forced and just very phony. Sheamus and Big Show beat Cody Rhodes and Mark Henry. I fucking hated this match with a passion. I get that Mark Henry's time has come and gone, even though I disagree with that. Fine, I get that. It was a nice run. But do you really have to beat the guy down like this every single week? Yet again, he eats a brogue kick from Sheamus in about 30 seconds and gets pinned. I mean, better him, I guess, than the Intercontinental Champion, but he never should have been in this match to begin with. Now, speaking of Henry, according to the Pro Wrestling Torch, who posted a report during the week, it seems that the world's strongest man may be on his way out of WWE, which would explain his recent spate of losses. The report says that after Henry pulled his groin Back on December 12th, Vince McMahon refused to give him time off in order that he work hurt. He had no sympathy for this man. And this has led to tension between the two sides, and with Henry's contract coming up for expiration later this year, it may be a situation where Henry has elected not to renew his deal, hence why he has been losing so much. I just find this whole situation ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. I don't know if it's true or not, this report from The Torch, but if it is, why would McMahon harbor such ill will towards Mark Henry when no less than half a dozen other guys have gone down to injury recently? Including Alberto Del Rio, who also suffered a groin injury. I think, you know, granted, his was a tear and not a pull, but still, that's not a fun injury to deal with. It's very painful. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, Cody showed another embarrassing video of Big Show getting beat at WrestleMania, this time to Floyd, I'm a racist prick Mayweather, at WrestleMania 24. They also showed the awesome angle from No Way Out that year that set the whole match up, but this was just great. I mean, Mayweather legit punched Big Show in the face. They showed the blood streaming out of Big Show's nose. What a great fucking angle that was. Showing the blood here in all of its glory, by the way, gives me hope that someone will be wearing a crimson mask in that Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania. I guess we'll find out. But the story here is that Big Show does not have a very sterling record at WrestleMania. In fact, his WrestleMania record sucks. I think he's only won like one or two matches at WrestleMania. I mean, something just really preposterous like that. And that's part of the build to the Cody Big Show match at WrestleMania, which is not a match I'm terribly enthusiastic about, but we'll get to the WrestleMania card in a second. Then came our main event, with Rock coming out to the ring, his first time performing in the city of Portland, which I was not aware of. This segment has been the subject of some fierce debate in the IWC this past week, including on our own Facebook page. I think the consensus seems to be that it was not a great night for The Rock. He was good, but he needed to be great, coming off last week's promo by John Cena, and he fell short of that. The question is, was that by design, or did Rock really get flustered at the end there by Cena? I will say this much. I love, love, love how they have managed to convince people, or at least plant the seeds of doubt in their minds, that there is legitimate heat between Cena and The Rock. This is something that we have not seen in pro wrestling in a long-ass time. Over the past year, they have managed to convince a very nice chunk of the audience that there is some beef in real life between these two guys, or that it didn't start out that way, but now there is heat. Whatever the case may be, I just think it's fantastic. It's complete bullshit, of course, but it is fantastic. These guys know exactly what they're doing. Just remember that. So, Rock came out. He talked about John Cena taking him to task for saying a year ago that he was back and back for good, and said that he never meant that literally. I mean, really, anyone who took that literally is a fool. I took it to mean that he was back working with WWE again after years of being estranged, and he'd be around for appearances and a match here, a match there, here a match, there a match, everywhere a match, match. But, you know, you don't want Rock on TV every single week. He's a special attraction. He's not a full-time worker. Look at what happened to Hulk Hogan in 2002 after a while. He wasn't special at all. So Rock kept referring to somebody in the back, which I just assume was John Cena, although I've seen where some people seem to think he was referring to the anonymous texter that I ranted about last week. I don't think that's what he was referring to. I was actually very disappointed that he never got a dig in at those people. If I were him, I wouldn't have belabored the point, because that would be unprofessional, and most of the viewing audience would have no idea what he was even talking about. But I wish he would have said something. So that was a bit disappointing to me. He did mention at one point having done all the Raws, all the SmackDowns, live events and such back in the day, which is exactly what I said last week, so I was happy to hear him point that out. Rock said he used to think John Cena was a phony who went to private school and became the doctor of thugonomics. In reality, Cena is just a liar and a Kung Pao bitch. He got the people to chant Kung Pao bitch and then talked about how it was trending worldwide. Later, he got the fans to chant Cena's missing balls after talking about how Cena switched from jean shorts to camo shorts, and that worked because now Cena's balls could not be found. Again, he talked about how Cena's missing balls was trending worldwide. He did this like three or four times, and I can't tell you how sick I was by the end of it. I like Twitter. I plug my own Twitter page even, @SolomonSter, by the way. but not every 5 seconds. You know, WWE is obsessed with Twitter. Absolutely obsessed with Twitter. I mean, if Twitter were a person, WWE would not be allowed within 50 feet of them. That's how bad it is. So, it's only fair that I call Rock out on the shit, too. He has got to stop with all of the trending bullshit. Please, I'm begging you, just stop. It doesn't mean anything. It's not a true indicator of what's popular. It does not make you any money. It doesn't make WWE cool again. Please stop the pain. So Cena interrupted, clearly fed up with all the trending talk. He started acting all goofy, and I started turning on him again. But then he got serious, and he said that Rock was an egotistical son of a bitch who didn't care if WWE closed its doors tomorrow. Then came the other great controversy here when Cena pointed out that Rock had crib notes written on his wrist. He said, nice tattoo. This is the point where Rock really seemed to get rattled. Cena said that at WrestleMania, he's going to beat the hell out of him. Then he started walking off, turned back around, told Rock to continue trending, and then went to the back. And things fell apart for poor Rocky at this point, as far as I'm concerned. He said that Cena talks about being tough, but he isn't tough. He kept repeating himself. I mean, he literally said the same thing like 3 times in a row. And then he kept saying, John, 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 listen, John. Hey, John, John, listen to me, John. Listen to me. John, John, listen to me. I swear to God, he sounded just like Dustin Hoffman and Rayman here. I mean, that's how annoying this got. And finally, he got himself together. He vowed to kick Cena's ass at WrestleMania, and that was that. I do think this promo was designed to make John Cena look good. I don't think it was designed to make Rock look bad. But he played it that way. Was it on purpose, or did he really get flustered? You know, who's to say? Personally, I think it was part of the act. You know, it's what the guy does for a living. He acts. It was compelling to see Cena kind of knock him on his ass a bit, and that's what we need to see more of. You know, he can't just stand there and smile and take the abuse, and now he's finally pushing back. He's showing some balls by standing up to the Rock. That's what made this so great. As far as the crib notes go, yes, he had a cheat sheet for his promo written on his wrist. It was blatantly obvious. He wasn't even trying to hide it. It was done on purpose, so clearly done on purpose. It wouldn't surprise me if Rock has used notes before and we just never noticed. I know Chris Jericho has done it in the past. People are acting like it's the first time any wrestler has done this. It's not. I mean, hell, Shawn Michaels once completely forgot his lines during a promo and had to be handed an actual script in the middle of the ring to finish his promo. That was on a tape show back in the day, obviously, so that part never aired. It's not the end of the world. The fact that it was so blatant and that Cena brought it up was clearly done on purpose. I mean, for crying out loud, people, John Cena is involved here. This is the quintessential company man. Do you really think John Cena would go off the script like that and intentionally embarrass the person that he's trying to make money with? This is the same John Cena who has been cutting unfunny, lame-ass promos for the past 6 years, using unfunny, lame-ass material supplied to him by the writers. He does what he's told. I've said it before, sometimes I wish he wouldn't. I wish he'd crumple shit up like Austin and Rock used to do and toss it in the trash if he didn't like it. I mean, maybe he does. But then that would mean that all those years of bad comedy was actually his fault, which kind of makes it worse. But whatever he's doing lately, he needs to keep doing it, because this makes 2 weeks in a row of good stuff from John Cena. He may yet have half the crowd cheering for him by the time they get to the go-home show. It's possible. It's just too bad that in Miami it won't mean a damn thing. He's still going to be booed out of the building, but, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun either way. I mean, this feud, to me, is finally starting to pick up some steam. I'm enjoying it. It's going to be a big match at WrestleMania. I'll be there for it. Even if I wasn't going to be there for it, I'm really starting to get stoked for it. What they do over the next 4 weeks is going to be obviously very critical in selling the match. Those last few weeks are going to be the most important. But again, Rock, not his best performance. Was it done on purpose? I think to some degree it was, because they realized that they had to kind of throw John Cena a bone here, the way they booked him. I think I've used the word castrated before. And it's not all John Cena's fault. WWE is at fault too. And I was talking about the Strikeforce women's fight earlier. Some of the best fights and the best matches are promoted when you have two people who don't like each other who were pretty evenly matched. And we know that Rock and Cena obviously don't like each other, so that's good. They've got that part down. At least they're not, this is not like a friendly exhibition between the two of them. Although they did make them tag team partners at Survivor Series in November, which absolutely nobody wanted to see, and they wonder why the Survivor Series buy rate was so bad. But anyway, these two guys obviously don't like each other. But the other key here, much as with the women's fight, is you need to look at Cena and look at Rock and think that this match could go either way. These guys are pretty evenly matched. Cena's tough, Rock is tough. Cena wins a lot of matches. Rock, well, this is his first singles match in over 8 years. So you don't have a lot to go by recently. But The Rock would come out every single week and embarrass him. You would make a fool of him on the microphone. He's given him two rock bottoms uncontested. Again, Cena got rock bottomed at WrestleMania and lost to The Miz last year. He got rock bottomed at Madison Square Garden at Survivor Series. And Cena has yet to lay one finger on The Rock since that time. The only thing Cena's done to The Rock is he gave him an attitude adjustment on the go-home show to WrestleMania last year, almost a year ago. That's it. So Cena now is starting to show some backbone in these promos. Now Cena's got to do something else. What does that mean? Does he pie-face Rock on Raw next week? I mean, if it were up to me, I don't know that I would let these guys really do much physically between now and WrestleMania because you don't want to give that away. But I think the week before the show, maybe, or 2 weeks before the show, a nice, well-placed pull-apart brawl might be the best way to go. You know, Cena goes for Rock's legs and, you know, kind of spears them down, and they're rolling around. The referees are trying to pull them off each other. I think at some point you need to do that. But beyond that, these two guys can't touch. I mean, there were a couple of readers who were complaining, I'm tired of seeing Rock and Cena, you know, talk about each other on Twitter and cut promos. Let's get some action. Get some action? Why don't you just give the whole fucking match away before the pay-per-view while you're at it? I think you want to have a pull-apart at one point, that's fine, but you can't give too much away here. You've got to keep these guys separate. You have to sell this match with their mouths. That's how you sell the match. You don't sell the match by giving it away. I mean, WWE has done that so many times. I mean, look at the Elimination Chamber. I think the week before the Chamber, or 2 weeks before, whatever it was, they had all six guys in the Raw Chamber match in a Texas Tornado match on Raw, basically. They basically had the Elimination Chamber main event without the Chamber on Raw 6 days before the pay-per-view. Why would you do that? Why would you put those six guys in the ring together and then expect people to pay money to see them 6 days later? It doesn't make any sense. So they've got to keep Rock and Cena apart for the most part. And the only way to keep people interested is by really ratcheting things up with these promos, making it more realistic, infusing some real hatred here between these two guys. Cena looked good the last 2 weeks. Rock this week, not so much. He kind of got knocked on his ass a little bit. Let's see what happens this week. Let's see how he rebounds. I think Rock is supposed to be on Raw. I think he'll be there live, I believe. Undertaker, I think, was supposed to be. Now he may not be. I know Shawn Michaels will be there. So it'll be another interesting week coming up on Raw in Boston this Monday night. And I guess because they're in Boston, that probably means the return of John Cena's Boston accent. That'll be something interesting. When you watch Raw Monday night, pay very close attention to John Cena's accent. Because when he's back home in New England, that accent tends to come out. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens again. By the way, for those of you wondering what Rock's note said on his wrist, some people took pictures of it. It said KRS to KBP, that being Kung Pao Bitch. It said Innovator to Camo. It said Two Reasons, and it said Call Out. So those of you who were gravely offended by this unprofessional act, you need to seek professional help. This wasn't Mike Adamley standing on stage as the Raw GM, literally with a script in his hand on TV. So if you were bothered by this, get over it. Let's talk about WrestleMania here for a second, because the card as it stands, aside from those top three matches, is not really a terribly exciting card. But you've got your three main events already locked in, so it really doesn't matter. But the WrestleMania card as it is now, we have John Cena and The Rock, obviously. We have Triple H and Undertaker. Hell in a Cell. Shawn Michaels will be involved in some way. Perhaps he'll still be the referee, which at one point was the plan. You've got the WWE Champion CM Punk against Chris Jericho for the title. And there's an interesting question here as far as Punk and Jericho are concerned. I've seen some debate online about this. Where should this match be positioned on the show? Should Jericho and Punk end WrestleMania? Should they be the final match? You know, traditionally, WWE likes to treat their main championship with great reverence and put it in the main event slot and make it mean something, which is fucking hilarious to me, by the way, that WWE still feels that way when they do everything in their power to make their title seem like shit. But it's still very important to put it in the main event of WrestleMania because otherwise people won't care about it. Obviously, Punk and Jericho are not going on last this year. Cena Rock is going on last. There's no other match that you can put on in that last spot, not even Hell in a Cell. Because you have John Cena and The Rock that you're building up as this dream match. You've been building this match for a year. It is the only option of what should go on last. So then what do you do with Punk and Jericho? Do they go second to last? Do you really want to run the risk of putting Punk and Jericho on after the Hell in a Cell match and have them try to live up to that? My suggestion is this. I think it would be worthwhile to at least consider opening the show with Chris Jericho and CM Punk at WrestleMania. I think it's worth consideration. I can understand if they don't want to do it. I can understand people who think that it demeans the championship and it makes it not feel like a big match. But to me, I look back, for example, at WrestleMania 10. Bret Hart was going to fight for the WWE Championship. They did a deal at the Rumble that year where he and Lex Luger were both co-winners. Then they did a coin toss on Raw to see who would get the first title shot against Yokozuna. There would be two title matches at WrestleMania. Whoever lost the coin toss would have a match first, earlier in the night. So Bret lost the coin toss, I believe, and he ended up in a match with his brother Owen, their first singles match on WWE TV. And that match between Bret and Owen opened the show. And it was a 20-plus, maybe 25-minute classic, one of the greatest matches in WrestleMania history. I mean, it was a match that I didn't think... It's kind of funny because you watch a match like that and think, oh, that match, they're never going to be able to top that match. And they actually, in my opinion, they did. A couple of months later, they had a cage match at SummerSlam, one of the best cage matches I've ever seen. But you open the show with Bret and Owen, and it's an interesting spot to be in because when whoever's in that first match, more often than not, like when there's a TV taping, it's usually the very first match, the dark match. People are just excited to see somebody. They're excited to see a star come out. So they're clapping, they're cheering, they're screaming, they're hollering. They're really into it. And it's kind of a similar situation with the opening match on a pay-per-view. The pay-per-view goes on the air. People are hungry for action. They want to see stars. And whoever you send out there, more often than not, they're probably going to get a pretty good reaction. And Punk and Jericho deserve to go out there, in my opinion, and have as much time as they need to put on a classic. These two guys can put on a clinic, and I want to see them do that. Even if there's going to be more matches, and this is only the first one, they deserve to go out there and put on the absolute best match that they can at WrestleMania. I would hate it if what happened to Kurt Angle, Randy Orton, and Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania 22 happened to Chris Jericho and CM Punk. That match at WrestleMania 22 went on towards the end of the show, and because they were running long at that point, your World Heavyweight title match, which is what that was, your World Heavyweight Championship main event with three of the best workers in the company got chopped down to 8 minutes. 8 minutes. I remember watching, I couldn't believe it when Randy Orton got pinned by Rey Mysterio, how it just came out of nowhere. It was such, in a lot of ways, it was such a throwaway match. And I just would hate to see the same thing happen to Punk and Jericho. You know, you put them on earlier in the show, and there's a lot less risk that they're going to be told, oh, you got to end your match. Because they're the first match. They're going to go as long as they feel they need, 20 minutes, 23 minutes, 18 minutes, whatever it may be. They'll probably have the crowd way into it, and they won't have to worry about having their match chopped in half. So I'm just saying, as unlikely as it may be, I would certainly consider putting them on first and not putting them in the middle of the show where they're more likely to get lost in the mix and possibly have their match time cut down. So we'll see what happens with that. We have Daniel Bryan and Sheamus for the World Heavyweight Championship. And, I could see them opening the show with Daniel Bryan and Sheamus, which would still be an improvement over where these guys were last year. They weren't even on the show. They were in a dark match. So even the opening match at WrestleMania would be a step up. I could see them opening the show with this as well, but I have a very big problem with opening the show for the second year in a row with your Royal Rumble winner. They did that last year. Alberto Del Rio won the Royal Rumble. He was in the opening match with Edge, and he lost at WrestleMania. And you talk about doing things to make the Royal Rumble seem completely insignificant. When they talk about how the winner of the Royal Rumble gets the right to go to WrestleMania to compete in the main event, and you open the fucking show with your Royal Rumble winner, there's something wrong with that. So they did it with Del Rio last year. I would hate it if they did the same thing with Sheamus this year. Just if for no other reason, to make the Rumble feel somewhat special. I just don't think you can put that match on first. So match order on this card, again, it's going to be very interesting because you've got a couple of different options, and I'll get to another one in just a second with what you can put on first. I would still lean towards Punk and Jericho personally, but it could very easily be your World Heavyweight title match too. Cody Rhodes will defend the Intercontinental Championship against The Big Show. I don't know what is going on with Shaquille O'Neal. I don't know if he's still going to be part of this show in some way. I still think Shaq, personally, I still think Shaq will have some sort of involvement in this show. Perhaps they had a deal, and now there is no deal. He's still going around telling people that he's going to be at WrestleMania in some way, not just as a fan in the audience. That's what Shaq says. But right now, it's Big Show and Cody Rhodes, and quite frankly, it's not a match I'm excited about. I got to be honest with you. Seeing Cody Rhodes and the Big Show just does nothing for me. As a WrestleMania match, it just doesn't belong. So I'm not terribly thrilled with that. Randy Orton and Kane, it's not officially announced, but it appears that that is the direction they're going to go in. So sucks for Randy Orton in a way, because Randy Orton, if in fact he has a match with Kane at WrestleMania, all due respect to Kane, it's another year where Orton is stuck in some sort of, you know, mid-card, relatively insignificant match at WrestleMania. It goes back to WrestleMania 26. You know, Orton was in the second or third match from the top of the card. And he was in there with Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase. I think he won. But still a relatively insignificant match. WrestleMania 27 last year, he was in a match with CM Punk. Very good match, but there was nothing on the line. It was in the middle of the show. It really wasn't built up as any sort of important match. And I believe Orton won that match as well. So the last time, you'd have to go back to WrestleMania 25 when Orton lost to Triple H in the main event. That was really the last real main event match or title match that Orton was in. And yet he's one of the biggest stars in the company. It's just it's an interesting thing to see when you compare him and John Cena, for example, and the positions they often find themselves in. It really goes to show you that Raw is the A show and SmackDown is the B show. So those are the only matches that are either officially announced or are seemingly going to be announced at this point for WrestleMania. Those are the only obvious matches that we have on the card. Obviously, there's a lot of other people, a lot of very talented people who still have no position on the WrestleMania card this year. We've heard that Money in the Bank at one point was an idea and that it was dropped. And supposedly there were reports, you know, this week that, you know, it was dropped because Wade Barrett was going to win and he got hurt. So because of Wade Barrett's injury, Money in the Bank got scrapped. Despite what you may have read as far as that goes on certain websites, it's not true. It's not true at all. Money in the Bank apparently was dropped before Wade was even injured. But they had gone back and forth on whether or not they were going to do one. I assume they weren't going to do one because they still hadn't gotten rid of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And if you're going to do a Money in the Bank pay-per-view with two Money in the Bank matches, then why the hell would you do one at WrestleMania? Unless you were putting something else up for grabs and not a briefcase with a world title contract inside. Otherwise, there's absolutely no reason to do one unless you're going to get rid of the pay-per-view. But the other part about this is I am so sick. I am so sick to death of Battle Royals this year that I would much rather see the remaining guys included in a Money in the Bank match and just get rid of that entire pay-per-view. That's what I would prefer to do. You don't need two Money in the Bank matches and a whole pay-per-view dedicated to it. Even though the last two Money in the Bank pay-per-views have been excellent, you don't need it. You could do the match at WrestleMania, make it mean more, get rid of the pay-per-view. And instead of doing a battle royal where you just dump a bunch of guys in the ring and it means nothing, you've already done a gazillion battle royals this year. So do a Money in the Bank match and put people in there like Dolph Ziggler, Miz, Kofi Kingston, R-Truth, Christian, Mark Henry, Alberto Del Rio, maybe even Brodus Clay. I know he's been taken off TV, but that would be an interesting spot for another babyface. Because you got to even it out. You got to have, if not an equal number of heels and faces, you can't have, you know, six heels and two faces. You got to even it out somehow with the heel-face ratio. So maybe you put, Justin Gabriel in there and keep Mark Henry off the card if he's still hurt or if they just want to fuck with him because he's not re-signing. You know, they could do a deal where Mark Henry loses to Justin Gabriel on the Raw, the SmackDown show before the pay-per-view, and therefore he loses his slot in the Money in the Bank match. I'm just trying to think like WWE does. It hurts my brain when I try to do that, but I do try. That's what I would do with all of these other bodies that have nothing to do. It appears to me that Laurinaitis and Teddy Long are going to have some sort of match. Maybe not a singles match against each other, but there's going to be a match of some kind at WrestleMania to determine who the sole general manager is of both Raw and SmackDown. My guess, and it's purely a guess on my part, It'll be some sort of tag match. Perhaps it'll be David Otunga teaming up with John Laurinaitis against Santino Marella and Teddy Long. So you'll have Laurinaitis and Long in the match, but it won't be a singles match, which would be a terrible idea. So, you know, Santino's been involved. Otunga's been involved. Make it essentially a tag match. You know, they could do that. I was even thinking they could do some sort of, you know, eight-man tag match where it's Team Laurinaitis, which is, you know, Del Rio and Christian and Henry, and then maybe Otunga against Team Long. And you can have, you know, Santino and some other baby faces on that team. You can do that also. But I'm thinking Otunga and Laurinaitis against Marella and Long is what we may get at WrestleMania. Now, Zack Ryder has been out. He's been hurt, obviously. If his injuries were real and if his injuries were to be believed, he wouldn't be wrestling again in 2012, if ever. I mean, this fucking guy, he's got a neck brace. He's got a back brace. I mean, it's amazing he's not paralyzed from the neck down. But I'm sure Zack Ryder is going to be A-okay for WrestleMania. He'll probably be back in a few weeks, if not this week. And he still hasn't avenged his U.S. title loss to Jack Swagger. You would think that he would want his rematch. He never got his rematch for the United States Championship. So my guess, and again, purely a guess, would be that we're headed for a Zack Ryder, Jack Swagger U.S. title match at WrestleMania, where they can build it up, where Ryder wants his belt back, and at WrestleMania, he wins the championship back from Jack Swagger. He may as well. They're not doing anything with Jack Swagger. He's had maybe one appearance on Raw since he's won the title. It's a complete waste. And once they announced, or again, they haven't announced it yet, but it looks like it'll be Kane and Randy Orton. I thought they might do Kane and Zack Ryder. In fact, there was an idea I talked about that I think somebody proposed in the mailbag a couple of weeks ago that I thought was great, where Kane would be going crazy. He would beat Swagger, take the U.S. title, and kind of mock Zack Ryder. You know, I took your health, now I took your title, I took your woman away from you, and you would build to a match where Zack Ryder finally has the courage to stand up to Kane and win the title back from Kane at WrestleMania. It doesn't look like they're doing that now, so you may as well just put Ryder in there with Swagger. And the only other match, if you got to get the Divas on the card, if you have to put them on there, Beth Phoenix and Karma, to me, is the one match that makes sense. You can't do Beth Phoenix and Natalya. Even though Beth and Natalya have been friends, they've been partners, now it appears they're splitting. Natalya's going babyface, if she isn't already. In that respect, yes, it would make sense to do it. But the moment they saddled Natalya with this farting gimmick, she became a comedy character. I don't want to see Beth Phoenix against a comedy character at WrestleMania. I would much rather see Beth Phoenix and Karma, a fresh opponent that people could believe is as tough, if not tougher, than Beth Phoenix, and will give her a run for her money at WrestleMania. But I have no idea when Karma is supposed to come back. You know, the Royal Rumble thing was a one-off appearance. She's still at home with her baby. She may not be back in time for WrestleMania. I'm not sure. But it's interesting I mentioned Karma here. In response to a question that someone asked about CM Punk and Chris Brown in the latest SC Scoops mailbag, which went up on the main page on Thursday, so you can go back and check it out if you missed it, I actually suggested that if WWE were to book Chris Brown, and I don't think they will, nor should they, but if they were going to book Chris Brown in a match at WrestleMania, I would do it lower on the card, not a main event match or anything like that. Do it lower on the card and put him in there against Karma. There's a woman that I don't think Chris Brown's going to be able to beat around very easily. I would pay money to see Chris Brown and Karma, especially in a shoot match at WrestleMania. That would be very interesting. So that's the WrestleMania card and potential card as it stands right now. Perhaps if you have any suggestions, you can let me know what you think about that. But again, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what they do on the undercard. You've got a WWE Championship match that's going to be very good to great. You've got the Hell in a Cell match with Triple H and The Undertaker. Undertaker trying to go 20-0. How Shawn Michaels factors into that, we'll find out. And of course, you've got Rock and Cena. At the end of the day, that's all that matters. I just had a conversation with Noah Mark a little while ago. We were talking on the phone about some stuff. And we were talking about the WrestleMania card, and he asked me, what do you think about WrestleMania, the card as it stands right now? And I said to him, we've got three solid matches at the top of the card. The rest doesn't even matter, because the rest really is very uninspired. It doesn't do anything for me, but it doesn't matter, because you've got your top three matches. And I said to him, I said, you know, people love to romanticize a lot. And I do this myself, about those old WrestleMania shows, the days of Hogan and Savage and Warrior and all that. If you really go back and look at the lineup for those WrestleMania cards, first of all, you had 13 or 14 matches on one show, which is way too many matches to have. On a WrestleMania show, I think 8 or 9 matches tops is all you need. But you would have 13, 14 matches. They would try to fit everybody on the show in singles matches. I mean, maybe they would have a battle royal, but you would have, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan against Bad News Brown, or Dino Bravo against Tito Santana. Just complete bullshit matches that nobody could possibly care about. But it didn't matter because it only came down to that one main event. Maybe a second match, but usually it was that one main event. WrestleMania 6, for example. Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. Aside from Roddy Piper painting himself in blackface to go up against Bad News Brown, does anybody remember much, if anything, about that card at WrestleMania 6? Could you tell me 3 other matches right off the top of your head without cheating from WrestleMania 6? I mean, I can, just because Demolition winning the belts from Andre and Haku is one of my favorite matches. I just thought it was great. But aside from that, even I would have to, I'd have to sit here and really think. I mean, I could do it. I don't think most people could do that. But it didn't matter, because Hogan and Warrior, that made the show. That's all people think about. That's all people remember. And it delivered. So, again, the undercard is not as important as some people may think it is. It's important to the people who are on the undercard, but in terms of WrestleMania as a lineup, they've got 3 blockbuster matches already signed. That's really all you need. You don't really need more than that. We have some updates this week on the new WWE Network, and it's not all good. The New York Post reported on Friday that WWE has yet to sign 1 cable or satellite outlet for their planned network, which is slated to launch later this year. Supposedly November is now the target date to launch the network. And the company is also having problems finding cable executives to work for them as they plan their launch. A lot of people, veteran cable executives, do not want to work for the WWE Network. For whatever the reason is, either there's this stigma about pro wrestling, why would I want to work for a pro wrestling channel? I think in most cases, they just figure this thing is not going to last. They just don't see how the WWE Network can survive. I mean, you have cable networks out there that are launched. And I mean, Oprah even. I mean, Oprah's network is still going, and Oprah is one of the most powerful women in the world. And even she has had loads of problems with her own network, getting viewers and getting penetration on enough cable systems and all that. And WWE thinks they're just going to waltz in and they're going to have 50 million people right off the bat with access to their channel and that people are going to watch. It doesn't work that way. And I think a lot of these executives see this as something that's going to fail rather quickly, and they don't want to be a part of that. They don't want that on their resume. And I can't say that I blame them. But, you know, one source in the article said that WWE has the programming and marketing muscle, but they just have no one with cable experience who can execute for them. So if they can't bring people aboard, it's going to be a very big problem for them. Now, what all of this apparently means is that WWE Classics On Demand is getting a stay of execution as a result of the network launch being delayed. The service was set to discontinue at the end of the month. I was very upset about this, you may recall. But it will live on, apparently, at least until such time that the network launches. And if the network isn't going to launch until November, then that must mean Classics On Demand is going to be around for most of the year. So as a current subscriber, I am very happy to hear this. I was very disappointed that I would lose that at the end of the month, and now I won't. So if there's one silver lining in the cloud, it's that. And we have some other news as well, if this network ever does launch. Legends House. Said before, Legends House, they're trying to get the show on Sci-Fi Network. If they can get a deal with Sci-Fi to put the show on that channel, it could launch, it could run as early as April, mid-April. But if they can't get the show on Sci-Fi, if Sci-Fi passes, USA already passed, they don't want it, they may actually wait until the network launches. So don't just assume that if they can't get Legends House on cable that they're just going to put it on their YouTube channel. They may sit on the show and keep it in their vault until the network launches and then air it then. And I've said before, it is a legitimate concern that I raise. You have a show with a lot of older wrestlers. There's a lot of wrestlers that don't even make it to old age. But you've got people on the show like, and I'll get to the cast in a second, but you've got a lot of older people on the show. God forbid something happens. I pray that nothing happens. But it would be a really difficult situation if they taped this show, and the show is currently filming, and they're going to hold it until the network launches. And let's say the network doesn't launch in November, even if it does. But let's say it gets delayed again until the very beginning of 2013. What happens if one of the people on that show dies? I mean, how do you do that? How do you market that show now? Especially if this show is going to have a lot of silly stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of manufactured, Feud, any reality show that you watch, they always, you know, this person hates this person, and this person is portrayed as a prick, and this person is portrayed as a saint, and it's just a very potentially bad situation to be in if, God forbid, something happens. That's why I don't like the idea of taping the show and then holding it for 9 months and not airing it. I would guess it's going to air at some point in the near future, but who knows. But the Legends House cast, TMZ, got some footage from a dance lesson, which apparently is going to air as part of one of the shows. And the cast for Legends House consists of Rowdy Roddy Piper, which we already knew, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Tony Atlas, Jimmy Hart, Hillbilly Jim, Pat Patterson, WWE Hall of Famer, first Intercontinental Champion, Howard Finkel, and Mean Gene Okerlund. That is the unofficial cast as it stands for Legends House. And I love most of the people on that list. God bless the Fink, Mean Gene, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Jimmy Hart's a great guy, by all accounts. They could have done better with this. You know, when there were rumors that Honky Tonk Man was going to be part of the cast, for example, you take a guy like Honky Tonk Man, even if his act is complete bullshit, you know, him having these feuds with all these people, it's all part of his shtick, but still, you take a ticking time bomb like Honky Tonk Man and drop him in the middle of that house and tell me that that won't make for entertaining television. So if he's not part of the show, and it doesn't appear as though he is, this just seems like a very sanitized, you know, kind of lineup. I'm surprised Sergeant Slaughter or, you know, Jerry Briscoe isn't part of this lineup. So I'll watch the show. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure it'll be interesting, but I'm a little disappointed in that lineup, I got to be honest with you. One more note about the new network, and this concerns a new series that they had planned, and I think is still the plan to air as part of the WWE Network. They're going to have some sort of cruiserweight show, apparently. They have been in talks with certain talents on the independent circuit in the 200-pound range. They want to have some sort of show that circles around these cruiserweights. I don't know what the show would be about. Maybe it's about their struggle in a big man's world to make it. Maybe it's just, I have no idea. I have no idea what the premise of the show is. I just know that it involves cruiserweights. They've been contacting people, and it will be part of the new network whenever it may launch. So there you go. Here's an interesting story for you. WWE published their 10K report, which is an annual report required by law that gives a summary of a public company's performance. And in this 10K report, it just so happens to include a renewed wrestler contract with one Triple H. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, fear not. The Cerebral Assassin is, in fact, staying with WWE. I guess there goes the Impact Zone debut of Jean-Paul Levesque, and or his potential mixed martial arts career in UFC. I guess we're left wondering what might have been. But apparently the game's new deal went into effect on January 1st of this year. It ends on March 30th of 2016. So he is secure. And interestingly enough, it says that Triple H will be paid a minimum annual compensation of $1 million for each year under contract. He will be limited to 180 dates per year, unless both parties mutually agree to extend beyond that number. That's kind of similar to the deal TNA has had with people like Ric Flair, who were contracted for a certain number of dates. And you'll notice, even Rob Van Dam, when TNA either reaches that point or gets very close, because they'll overuse these guys, and then they'll realize, oh shit, we're going to go over the limit, which we're not allowed to do, and so all of a sudden somebody like Ric Flair or Rob Van Dam disappears from television for seemingly months on end. And that has to do with provisions in their contracts very similar to this, which limits the number of dates that person can appear unless that person goes to TNA and they work out a higher number. And the last part here that was involved in the 10K report as it relates to Triple H's new contract, which I found kind of fascinating, it says that in addition to other wrestling companies, and you would expect there to be a provision in there, obviously, that says you are under contract to WWE, you cannot work for another wrestling organization, even though, I don't want to get into a whole argument about this, but again, if these guys are considered independent contractors, that is a bullshit provision. It is such bullshit. It's such bullshit that they continue to get away with that. If they're a real independent contractor, they should be allowed to work wherever they want to. But whatever. Anyway, the provision here also states that Triple H cannot appear for any martial arts company while under contract. So, again, for all those people out there who don't think that WWE, who actually believe WWE when they say that we don't consider UFC competition, they consider UFC competition. And this is another example of why. If they weren't competition, they wouldn't feel the need to actually put that in writing in their contract. So I assume that line is in there for every talent contract, not just Triple H, but I just thought that was kind of funny. So, yep, the game's not going anywhere, people. He's going to be around for a while. Final note here before we move on. I wanted to mention the Jesse Sorensen, Zema Ion stuff from TNA and give an update. Dixie Carter posted an update on Jesse this week on Twitter. She said, Jesse met with doctors this week and is out for up to a year. We are blessed that he will be back at all. He is staying positive. No comment from him on Zema. So that was the update from Dixie Carter. Very good to see that Jesse Sorensen will at some point hopefully be able to make it back. And, you know, even if he's not able to, the fact that he narrowly avoided disaster. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he couldn't feel his legs for a long time after that incident happened and slowly started to regain sensation in his lower body. He could have been paralyzed. He could have been paralyzed from at least the waist, if not the neck down. He could have been killed. He could have very easily been killed had Zema Ion come down on him an inch or two over. You know, it was that close. And so he is very fortunate. And a lot of people were very upset this week over a promo that Zema Ion cut that aired on the TNA website. I watched the promo that Zema Ion cut on Jesse Sorensen. For the benefit of those of you who may have missed it, here's the audio from it. Take a listen.
Do I feel remorse about what happened to Jesse Sorensen? Do I feel remorse? I am the number one contender for the X Division title. I feel good. This is pro wrestling. There's a risk involved. Everybody knows that. This is not ballet. But people don't want to take me seriously. I'm just getting started. I turn heads. I break necks. I'll do a backflip right here and break your neck if I have to. So all of you haters on Twitter calling me names, calling me a fruit. Some guy called me a fruit. I'll tell you what, I'd pick being a fruit over being a vegetable any day of the week.
You heard the interview there. Was it in poor taste? Yes, it was in poor taste. But I don't have a problem with them doing it if they're trying to get Ion over as a cocky, arrogant bastard, which I think is what they're trying to do here. You know, this is different than WWE or WCW mocking Jim Ross having Bell's palsy, just to give another example of something distasteful that we've seen on wrestling television. It's different from that. You know, that was done just to be mean-spirited, and it wasn't going to make either company any money. They were just being dicks about it. Here, Zema Ion is a heel, cutting a heel promo. You know, really, it's no different than Paul Heyman marketing Chris Benoit as the Crippler after breaking Sabu's neck in ECW, or WWF selling t-shirts that said, Owen316 says, I just broke your neck, after Owen Hart dumped Steve Austin on his head and almost ended his career at SummerSlam. I actually like the fact, for example, that at the Against All Odds pay-per-view, after the incident happened, Zema Ion didn't break character and act all concerned. He gloated about it. He was basking in the glory of his victory. That win made him the number one contender for the X Division title. Great! He should be happy about that. But back to the promo, I mean, I thought the line where Ion said that he'd rather be a fruit than a vegetable was actually really clever. But I can understand if people think it crosses a line. I can see both sides of the coin on this. I can't take one side over the other. By the way, when I mentioned the Owen Hart example on Twitter, I apparently incurred the wrath of the great Lance Storm, who took a really pissy tone with me in response, even though I was only asking him a question. That was only my intent. I wasn't trying to be an asshole or anything. I was asking him a question, and he was kind of a dick in response, and it is what it is. I will try to pick up the pieces of my life and move on, even though Lance Storm is upset with me. So, last item here, according to an article from the website TeamHellions.com, one of WWE's equipment trucks ran off the road in upstate New York on Thursday night. That's terrible, of course. I mean, my father drives a truck for a living. I hope the driver is okay. But what I found humorous about this was the fact that it was a WWE truck with The Miz painted on the side. What a perfect metaphor for how this poor fucker's career is going of late. I just thought that was too rich not to mention here. It's time for some sound-off shout-outs here this week. My thanks to Ed Gon for leaving a review of the show in iTunes, as well as Joey M. Wilson, who in his review actually said, this is one of my favorite wrestling podcasts. It is appointment programming for me every week. One of? I'll let that one slide. A couple of birthday shout-outs here as well. Colin Dunn will be turning 13 on March 10th, so happy birthday to Colin. Matt from Wisconsin will also be celebrating a birthday, his 15th birthday, coming up on March 10th. So happy birthday to Matt. And Nazario wanted to use his shout-out to wish a happy early birthday to his beautiful girlfriend, Liberty Stevens, which is coming up on March 24th. He says, love you, baby. My girl, not you, Solo Monster, even though I'm sure you're a nice guy. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So those are the shout-outs for this week, and that means we're going to move on now to the mailbag. And for mailbag questions, shout-outs, and all that stuff, you can email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com, thesolomonster. Don't forget the word the. I know people are, I think some people are emailing solomonster@gmail.com, and they're annoying somebody else. You got to email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. This first letter comes in from David Bantz, who writes into the podcast, Your Solomonster. I've been a dedicated wrestling fan for years. I even got John Cena's fake email address that he gave during the anonymous GM angle. I've also been a dedicated listener since episode 207. Well, it's better to start late than never. Finally gave the show a listen when I heard that you were going to discuss the fans whatting The Undertaker. I wanted to smash all of them in the face with a large, heavy object. Anyway, my question concerns something I've been working on for a while, a WWE board game. I've been working on it for years. It's getting to the point where it's going to be complete soon. Do you think that there is a chance that a board game based on wrestling could work, something that the WWE would get behind? Well, they've done board games before. I vividly remember playing at least one, if not more than one. They've had a couple of different ones over the years, regular board games. And the one that I remember, I think I played this when I was younger, I think they had a board game called Wrestling Challenge, which was named after the TV show. So I remember there being some sort of wheel that had different wrestling personalities on it, like Hulk Hogan and Jake the Snake and Mr. Perfect. And I don't remember the premise of the game, but they've definitely had several board games in the past over the years. And, you know, my guess would be that if they have no board games right now, they probably wouldn't get behind it only because they've tried it before and it probably didn't make them a lot of money. But they've definitely done it before. I know that for a fact. But David, anyway, talks about his game and wanted me to mention it and thought maybe some people could send in feedback on whether or not they would be interested in playing a WWE board game if this idea ever came to fruition. So I guess I'll leave that in the hands of the listeners. Would anybody listening have an interest in playing a WWE board game? I mean, personally, I think I may be out of that demographic at this point. And in today's day and age, with electronics and the internet and iPhones and all these different things, I just think a traditional wrestling board game would get very boring, I guess I should say, very quickly. It depends what the game is about. You know, if it's an interesting concept, if the game is really fun, it may have some staying power. I just don't see how in 2012 a wrestling board game in the traditional sense would work. But I could be completely wrong about that, so I'll let other people comment on that. Jay writes into the Sound Off, Dear Solomonster, I've been listening since the early 100s. My question is, you often talk about the invasion angle from 2001 and about how bad it was. Can you please tell us in detail how you would have done the angle and what superstars you would have utilized? It's interesting I get this question here. This question came in before the main page SE Scoops mailbag. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. It was posted on Thursday, so again, go back and take a look at it if you missed it. I answered another invasion question. I get invasion questions every now and then. And, I talked in the mailbag this week about how the invasion wasn't necessarily bad. It just wasn't nearly as good or as great as it could have been. But you want to know, you know, what I would have done, how I would have done it differently. I would have gone one of two ways. And I'm not sure which way I would have gone. I would sit down and figure out which one makes more sense. But you could do this one of two ways. First of all, both ideas involve the use of top flight WCW stars. One of the reasons that the invasion failed, and again, some people would argue it didn't fail. They did make money. But one of the reasons, I should rephrase that the invasion did not do as well as it should have, and could have been more exciting and more fun, and could have lasted a lot longer than just a couple of months before they killed it off, was to bring in people like Hulk Hogan, like Ric Flair, like Eric Bischoff, like Bill Goldberg, like Scott Steiner, guys like that. Instead of waiting a year or 2 years to bring these guys in, eventually they brought every single one of these fucking guys in. It's not like, well, we're never going to work with this guy. Aside from Lex Luger and Randy Savage, for obvious reasons, you know, who among the top WCW stars did they not eventually sign anyway? They brought in the NWO, they brought in Bischoff, they brought in Steiner, they brought in Goldberg, they brought in Flair. If they would have done it earlier, even some of those guys, not even all of them, it would have made all the difference in the world. So one idea is you figure out who you want to essentially lead what will be a WCW invasion. You do what I call an infiltration angle. And you decide, do you want Ric Flair to be the person or do you want Eric Bischoff? You could use either one of those guys. And however you set it up, Flair comes in or Bischoff comes in 1 week. It's a shocking thing. Here they are on Raw. And they come, and everybody knows WCW is dead, and it's, you know, the organization went out of business. So you have Bischoff or Flair come on Raw 1 week and sing the praises of Vince McMahon and sing the praises of WWF. I'm here because I heard for years that WWF was the number one, and obviously you guys were right. You know, WCW is no more. I would love to come work for your organization. You've got some of the best, most talented, gifted wrestlers in the world, and of course it's complete bullshit. But people start to buy into it. Maybe people don't, and they question the motivations. I think that would be more so with Bischoff. People would just assume he's a lying sack of shit, which he is. With Ric Flair, he'd have more credibility. He'd have a lot of people cheering for him. I would use Ric Flair, actually, to be honest with you. And have Flair come in, and he's this big baby face, and everybody loves him, and he's so happy to be back in the WWF. And, you know, however you go about setting it up, all roads lead to this one pay-per-view show where in the main event or after the main event is over, all of a sudden, here comes Goldberg, here comes Nash, here comes Hogan, Flair. I mean, whatever combination of guys you want to use. These guys start coming out of the woodwork and beating the crap out of the WWF guys. They just attack The Rock. They attack The Undertaker. They attack maybe Stone Cold Steve Austin or Kane or Chris Jericho or whoever. And it's basically this one-night invasion angle. Flair obviously turns heel in the process. Flair always wants to be a heel. He hates being a babyface anyway. And Flair could kind of lead the charge of WCW guys who are invading WWF. And now you've got this full-on invasion of top WCW guys going up against the top WWF guys. And I just think it would be an exciting angle. The other way you can do it, of course, is kind of similar to how they did it, where 1 week one guy comes out, interferes in a match or attacks somebody. Then the next week somebody else comes out. You know, Booker T comes out 1 week. Then you start to gradually, you know, the next week a bigger star comes out. And then eventually, you know, Hall and Nash come out of nowhere and they start beating people up with lead pipes. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? I mean, that's a very effective way to get people to tune in every single week. You don't know which WCW star is going to invade next. And you kind of take it from there. Those are the two approaches personally that I would have taken. But again, both approaches are similar in that you had to use the big names from WCW. And for the people who say, well, you know, Vince McMahon didn't have any choice in the matter. These guys didn't want to come to WWF. They chose to sit out the remainder of their contracts on their ass on their couch at home and collect a paycheck. That's all true. That's what most of those guys opted to do, with the exception of Booker T and Diamond Dallas Page. Booker T and Diamond Dallas Page could have done that and could have made a lot of money, and they decided they wanted to go to the WWF. They didn't want to sit at home, and they opted to either let WWF, you know, buy them out of the deal, or whatever the case may be. They left a lot of money on the table by doing that. But guys like Goldberg and Hogan and Nash, they were perfectly content to sit at home and collect paychecks. All Vince McMahon had to do was go to these guys, or go to Turner, or whoever, you know, was overseeing the contracts, and say, listen, I want to buy you out. I will buy out the remainder of this person's contract, however much money it is, and I will negotiate a new deal with them to bring them to WWE. Yes, people like Goldberg and Hogan especially were not going to come cheap. All told, it would have cost WWE a couple of million dollars. But you can't tell me that by spending a couple of million dollars to get some of these guys, by doing the invasion angle the correct way, by building to a WrestleMania-type show with some big main events, maybe including Hogan versus Austin, and these matches that people for years had wanted to see, you would have made that money back tenfold. I mean, if you spent $10 million to sign all those guys and bring them over, by the time this invasion angle was done, if you played your cards correctly, you know, you could have made a $20, $30, $40 million profit on your investment. I really think long-term they would have made so much more money off this, and perhaps, you know, the WCW brand could have been resurrected. The original plan, they were going to keep WCW alive. They were going to have they were going to turn Raw into Nitro. Imagine how different things might have been had Vince McMahon gone with his original plan. And Raw would have become the WCW show. It would have become Nitro on USA, and SmackDown would have been the WWE, or SmackDown would have become Raw, whatever the plan was. up until that Tacoma, Washington match, that awful main event with Buff Bagwell and Booker T, which just completely, officially ended WCW as an organization. Had the invasion been handled differently, you might have been able to keep WCW going as a separate brand. Today, we might have a WWE brand and a WCW brand. I mean, there's no telling what might have happened. But they didn't even give themselves an opportunity. They got one big pay-per-view buy rate out of it. They did 775,000 pay-per-view buys for that Invasion show in July of 2001. The biggest buy rate for any non-WrestleMania show they've ever done. So they made a lot of money off that show. One show. That's it. Even the Survivor Series show that had Team WWF triumphing over the Alliance. I don't think that show did particularly well. It did a hell of a lot better than Survivor Series does all these years later. But they dropped the ball so badly on what they could have done with this. I just refuse to accept the argument that the Invasion was this great, fantastic thing and everybody, you know, would have handled it the exact same way. If you would have handled the Invasion the exact same way, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. Because even if it was good, it could have been so much better. I mean, it was like a pot of gold was dumped in their lap. If there was one angle, if there was one storyline you don't fuck up, this was the one. And that's what they did. And that's the problem I have with the Invasion. As good as it was, it could have been so much better. And it's just all these years later to look back on that, it just makes you shake your head and wonder how that could have happened. How could something like that happen? Barry writes into the Sound Off. Dear Solomonster, my name is Barry Wright. Semi-new to listening to your Sound Off, as my two best friends told me about it. And actually, one of them, Walter, was mentioned on your podcast last week and mentioned me as the indie wrestler from Chicago who just started listening. My question is, what is your favorite Owen Hart wrestling bout? He was always one of my favorite wrestlers, and I was devastated after his death to the point where I chose my Catholic confirmation name as Owen in honor of him. My favorite match would be where he beat Bret at Mania 10. What is yours and why? The match with Bret at WrestleMania 10 is an all-time classic, and it was great because Owen beat him clean as a sheet, and it was genuinely shocking. I mean, if you look at the reaction of the audience, people were stunned. You know, here's Bret Hart, who's going to be fighting for the championship later on at the pay-per-view, one of the biggest stars in the company. And Owen Hart just beat him clean 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. That was what was so great about that match. And like I said before, the cage match at SummerSlam that year, one of the best cage matches I've ever seen. I could pick either one of those matches. If I had to pick another Owen Hart match to kind of round out my top three, that match he had with the British Bulldog in the finals that they taped from Germany of the European title tournament, it was taped in Germany. They aired it on Raw in February of 1997. That was where Bulldog won the European championship, first European champion. That was a great, great match. I mean, that was great. And actually, a lot of those tag team matches that Owen and Davey Boy had against, you know, the Smoking Guns and, you know, I mentioned Doug Furniss and Philip Lafon a little bit earlier. They had some great tag team matches as well. They were a great team. Very overlooked team, I think. But the matches against Bret, the match with Davey Boy, I think are probably some of the best matches Owen Hart has ever had. And he had some great ones with Shawn Michaels as well. But those three in particular stand out to me. He was a great performer, no doubt about it. Jacob writes into the Sound Off. Just listened to 207. Good shit as always. I'm stuck putting in 12-hour shifts this week, and I need something to keep me entertained. I will randomly pick Sound Offs that sound interesting and listen to them, but I'm wondering, what are your favorite podcasts that you've done? I've listened to all of the podcasts from episode 160 forward, and I'm wondering what you would recommend are your best podcasts prior to that. That's a tough question. I mean, I've done some shows that I've had fun doing. I've had some shows that I was really pissed off about something. One show that jumps out at me that you might want to go back and listen to, I believe it was episode 156, if I remember correctly. That was the show, I think, titled Exposing TNA's Appalling Treatment of Talent. I remember being in rare form on that show. I was really upset about that, and that's a good show to go with. I would also say episode 127, which was my WWE business review, how I would change the business, WWE that is, if I were in charge, things I would add, things I would stop from happening, people I would fire, people I would bring in. I tried to cover all bases with that show, put my money where my mouth is, so to speak. I think that was episode 127. Episode 129 was the first interview on the Sound Off ever. I did an interview with Tim Arson, who's big on the independent circuit and also in Puerto Rico as well, but perhaps is most well known for being the zombie on the original ECW One Sci-Fi show back in 2006. So I interviewed him. That was a lot of fun. And, episode 75, I think, is the one that had the Michael Jackson rant. Episode 65, I did a two-part sound. It's the only time ever I did two parts to a sound-off. I did like an hour-long review of WrestleMania 25, and then I did a normal show on top of that. So it was like 65A and 65B, technically. And but there, you know, there have been some fun shows. If you go back in the archives, I think those are some of the ones I would single out. And I got to be honest with you, I actually really enjoyed doing episode 207 last week. There was so much to cover. I thought for sure I was not going to be able to get away without doing a three-hour show. So when I looked at the timestamp and it said it went an hour and 20 minutes, I was the happiest guy in the world. So I thought last week's show was actually rather enjoyable as well. So if you want to go back in the archives and find those shows, you can go back, I think, as far as episode 43. If you really do a Google search and really search, you can find some pretty good ones in there. And I think those in particular are the ones that stand out to me the most. Craig from Manchester, England writes in, Dear Solomonster, wondering what would happen if there was an injury that kept John Cena out of WrestleMania. Who would replace him, or would the match just not take place? They obviously ran a risk booking this match a year in advance. I can tell you that John Cena, if he gets hurt, he's going to be at WrestleMania no matter what. Unless he breaks something and just cannot walk himself to the ring, there's no way they're not going to let this match happen at this point. Now, had Cena gotten hurt with a serious injury 2 or 3 months ago, you've already guaranteed that The Rock is going to be on the card, so obviously they would have had to come up with some sort of substitution. Who that would have been, I don't know. You know, do they talk Stone Cold out of retirement and do Austin Rock 4? Probably not, I would guess. I don't think Austin would be down for that. Maybe you could somehow work CM Punk in there, but again, it's an issue because CM Punk is a babyface, and he already has the title and has his issue now with Chris Jericho, so with enough advance notice, they would have had to have come up with a replacement. You can't promise that Rock is wrestling at WrestleMania in his hometown, no less, of Miami, and then just yank him from the card. And like I said, between now and then, let's hope nothing happens, knock on wood, but if John Cena gets hurt, unless he breaks his neck or breaks his arm or something like that, I don't care what the injury is, he's gonna be at WrestleMania no matter what. He is not going to let this match slip between his fingers because he suffered an injury. So I don't think we need to worry about that. Second question from Craig here. Have you ever kept the fact that you still watch wrestling from a girl you have met because you think it would put them off? How soon would you tell them? Is it something you have never been ashamed to admit? Obviously, there is still a negative vibe towards guys like us watching a fake sport. My advice is this. I don't know how old you are. I don't know if this is high school, if this is college, if this is just in the everyday world and you're dealing with women in their late 20s, early 30s. So it all depends on how old they are. But my suggestion is there's no reason to bring it up. You know, if you're first seeing somebody, if you're first dating somebody and they ask you what are your hobbies and what do you watch on TV, I don't really see there being a need to mention the fact that you watch wrestling. I mean, I try to avoid... I in the past have tried to avoid doing that just because I don't know this person well enough to know how they may react to something like that. When I really get to know somebody and I'm comfortable around them and I kind of get a sense of how they would react to such a thing, then I bring it up if need be. If it's not necessary to bring it up, don't bring it up. If you don't bring it up, you're not lying. See, it's all a matter of how you look at it. If you meet a girl and she wants to know what you like, what your hobbies are, what you watch on television, if you omit the fact that you are a wrestling fan and you watch, Raw, for example, every week on TV, by not saying it, you're not lying about the fact that you watch it. You're just not mentioning it. You're conveniently leaving it out. Some women are nuts. You know, they'll react. They'll look at that, like you said, and they'll look at you like you have a third eye in between your head. And unfortunately, that's just the way they are. Not all women are like that, obviously, but, some of them are. Don't mention it. If there's no reason to mention it, don't bring it up. At some point, by the third, fourth, fifth date, it's probably going to come up. But that's when it's safe because, if you're dating somebody and you like each other, she likes you, you like her, by that point, so many dates into the relationship, if by mentioning the fact that you're a wrestling fan, she decides to not see you anymore, then it was never going to work in the first place. Once you're in a safe zone where you actually like the other person and they feel the same way about you, then it's okay to mention that you're a wrestling fan, because maybe they're a wrestling fan too, and if they're not, then it's probably not a big enough deal to result in anything bad happening. So anyway, that would be my advice. They don't pay me to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but again, you wanted my advice, that's my advice. Do with it what you will. Tim writes in, he has a statement to make about the Rock Cena stuff. He says, this is in regards to the Rock promo from Monday night and the writing on the arm. Anyone who thinks that Rock seriously did that to use for his promo is a mark and a tool. Reason being that it was so blatant that it was there. I've seen in the past wrestlers had some stuff written on wrist tape, but you had to catch it when you would pause if they caught it at a weird camera angle. Never has it been so blatantly out there. This was a complete work to give John Cena some sort of victory over the Rock. I am a fan of both men for different reasons and have been looking forward to this for a while now. But if anyone seriously thinks that John Cena owned The Rock with anything he said, they are complete fools. Rock knows what's good for business. He knows that people aren't just going to tune in to see Cena get his ass beat. Wrestling fans enjoy drama, whether the IWC wants to admit that or not. Drama fuels wrestling. If every feud was just, I'm going to kick your ass, it would be the most boring thing ever. Bottom line is that Rock knows that Cena is going to need to win some of these battles on the mic, but he also knows that Cena flat out can't do it alone. Rock is loved by so many Attitude Era fans that it would take a full-on Rock heel turn to even make a dent in the cheers he receives. Everyone needs to face facts. Rock will not get booed unless he tells every fan they are fucking tools and he hates them all. That comes from Tim. And I got to be honest with you, even if Rock said that, I still think he would be cheered by half the crowd. It's like, it's the respect pop, you know? Chris Jericho got cheered for weeks at the beginning. I couldn't believe how stupid the people were when Jericho first came back. But he got cheered for weeks and weeks until he finally went full on heel. And now I think they finally got the picture and they boo him when he comes out. But sometimes it takes the fans a while, I think, to figure those things out. But I think Rock, in many ways, is in the same camp as Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair and people like that, where even if Rock tried to go heel, maybe Hollywood Rock from 2003 is the best example of that. You know, he got booed by the crowd, but he also got a shitload of cheers. People love that character. I love the Hollywood Rock character from 2003. I just thought it was great. I thought that was just a great, fun, smarmy character. And even then, you go back and watch that, even then he still got cheered. So, Alex in Chicago writes, Indir Salamaster, as the time for WrestleMania nears, and the shocking location of WrestleMania 29 revealing to be a combination of both New York and New Jersey, where do you think WrestleMania 30 should be held? And where do you think it will be held? My early prediction would be Toronto, which is a logical location for potentially the biggest WrestleMania in history. But my answer of where it should be held is a little bit different. I'm going to go out on a limb by saying it should be held in Chicago at Soldier Field. Stadium seats about 61,000 for football. While the capacity is not huge, you can easily bump that up to 65,000 or 70,000 for wrestling. Chicago is a fantastic city to visit and rich in wrestling history. With Chicago's McCormick Place, the biggest convention center in the U.S., less than a mile away, WrestleMania fan access could be held there. Plus, Soldier Field is located right on Lake Michigan, which can provide for some fantastic aerial shots during the show. The Hall of Fame ceremony in Raw the night after could be held at either the Allstate Arena or the United Center. The main concern is the weather, but with WrestleMania 29 being held outdoors in New Jersey, weather should not be a concern, as the average high in Chicago in April is about 60 degrees. Plus, with the way Chicago crowds have been, I think we are quite deserving of a WrestleMania in the near future. This is my personal bid for the biggest WrestleMania anniversary to be held in one of the two biggest wrestling cities in the world, and I also do realize that the city must bid for the event. Well, that right there is the key. If Chicago puts in a decent bid for WrestleMania, and they want to go there, they can make it work. But they're not going to go to people anymore and say, hey, we want to bring WrestleMania to your city. They want people to come to them. And there's really no way of predicting it. Because of the bids process, I can't sit here and tell you, well, I think WrestleMania is going to come to Chicago. I didn't know anybody who predicted WrestleMania 29 would be coming to New Jersey. You never know. You just never know who's going to put the best bid in that catches the company's attention. I wonder if WWE were to get a bid from a foreign city like Sydney or perhaps, you know, Paris even, or some city in France, you know, London or something. I know they're averse to wanting to bring WrestleMania overseas because of the cost involved and because of the time zone differential. That the time zone thing is the reason why they haven't come to the UK or Australia for a WrestleMania, and they may never go to either one of those places for a WrestleMania. But I wonder if any of those cities actually presented a bid to WWE, and it was a good bid, if they would at least consider bringing WrestleMania internationally to one of those cities. It really makes me wonder. As far as Chicago is concerned, is it going to be, is it going to be Soldier Field? I don't think so, but it's an interesting theory. You know, and Chicago is a great wrestling city. I can think of very few Chicago shows, like pay-per-views, Raws, and shows like that when WWE goes, where the crowd is not electric. And obviously, you go back to Money in the Bank last year, and that was a special situation because CM Punk was the hometown hero. I have never heard a crowd like that in my life. I mean, that crowd was on fire for most of the show, in fact, not just CM Punk. That was a great crowd. Chicago has great crowd. I know the wrestlers actually comment quite often about how great the catering is as well. They love going to Chicago. So for Chicago to come, you know, to host another WrestleMania, it won't be in the Allstate Arena. The last time they did that was WrestleMania 22. They don't want arena shows anymore, apparently, for WrestleMania, which is why I think Madison Square Garden is out. Soldier Field may be the most logical place, but it's going to come down to who bids on it the most. And as far as the weather is concerned, you're right. You know, if you're going to have WrestleMania in New Jersey outdoors in April, then you know what? You could do WrestleMania any damn place you please. But my suggestion, because we were talking about this earlier in the week on Facebook, you want to know where I think WrestleMania 30 should be held. If it's not going to be at Madison Square Garden where it belongs in New York City, because I just can't see them doing New York, basically New York, 2 years in a row, I would love to see WrestleMania go someplace else that they've never been to before. Why not Aloha Stadium in Hawaii? WrestleMania in Hawaii, you can build a whole marketing campaign around that. And as I said, the most important reason of all, it would give me a great excuse to go take a vacation to Honolulu for the first time in my life. I mean, who among us does not want to go to Hawaii? So to me, I think that would be fantastic. But again, if Hawaii doesn't bid on WrestleMania, then it's just not going to happen. So I guess we'll find out. It's New Jersey next year. I heard Indianapolis was considered possibly for the year after that. Toronto was always under consideration because it's been quite a while since WrestleMania came to Canada. I remember hearing at one point that, was it Dallas? Dallas was under consideration, but they're hosting, I think, is it March Madness or NCAA stuff the next 2 years? So they're out of the running for a while. Don't count out Indianapolis, by the way. Indianapolis is also another city that I've heard really for the last couple of years, and I think they have a new stadium out there as well, but I guess we'll find out. Last question here from Casey Collins, very simple. Would you watch SmackDown more often if it were on Thursdays? I would watch at least part of SmackDown more often if it was on Thursdays. So in other words, on Thursday nights, oftentimes I'll come home from work, I'll order in Chinese or whatever, and I'll watch TV, and one of my favorite shows on TV is Wipeout, which is this game show on ABC. If you've never seen Wipeout before, I know they have a whole bunch of different versions of it, and a lot of people think, oh, it's a ripoff of that old, you know, Extreme Elimination Challenge show with the Japanese guys or whatever, but it's a great show, and it airs on ABC's at 8 o'clock every Thursday, and so I would continue watching Wipeout. But when Wipeout ends at 9 o'clock, usually Impact is going on. I don't watch Impact every week. I would be more apt to put SmackDown on for the second hour. So at least part of SmackDown, if not the entire show, yes, I think I would be more apt to watch because a lot of times on Friday nights, I'm just not around. A lot of people go out on Friday nights or they have other things on TV that they watch. You know, the TV show I watch on Friday nights on HBO goes on at 10 o'clock, so it doesn't really conflict with SmackDown, but a lot of times I'm either not in the mood or I'm not around. It's one of the worst nights of the week for TV, even though SmackDown has been doing very good ratings. All things considered, for a Friday night show, they should be very pleased with the way SmackDown has been doing. And when they had their live SmackDown a couple of weeks ago, on a Tuesday night, they had another Tuesday night experiment. And, you know, the first time they did that, SmackDown popped a big rating. And they were really thinking about moving the show possibly at some point, making it live on Tuesdays. And who knows? I mean, it still might happen, but the rating that live SmackDown did 2 weeks ago, or however many weeks ago it was actually less, far less than what it's been doing on Friday nights, which I thought was actually very interesting. But yes, I would be more apt to watch at least part of the show, at least the second hour of the show, if they moved it back to Thursdays, which is, of course, the time slot that it used to be in. I still, for the life of me, cannot figure out, once they left my network and went to Sci-Fi Channel, the ball was in their court. Unless Sci-Fi, turned them down cold, I can't see Sci-Fi turning them down because SmackDown is one of their highest-rated shows. Why they didn't push to move SmackDown back to Thursday nights, I will never understand that. Why WWE didn't push for that, and like I said, maybe they didn't, they got shot down. I don't think that's the case. Why would you not want SmackDown on Thursday night? Thursday night is such a better night for a TV show. And by now, even if there were some growing pains at first, you know, people were so used to seeing it on Fridays, people would, by now, believe me, people would be used to seeing SmackDown on Thursday nights. And plus, you know, it's a way for them to stick it to Impact. I don't think they really give a shit that much about TNA, but it's a way for them to stick it to TNA, too. So why not? You know, why not do it? But they didn't. And it's too bad because, like, I think myself and a lot of other people would be more apt to watch that show if it was on a different night. That's going to do for the mailbag this week. If you have questions, as always, email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Another quick note here. You can go to the official website for The Minaret, which is the official publication of the University of Tampa. And there is a wrestling article that you can search for on that site written by Daniel Feingold, who is a fan of this show. He spoke to a bunch of different people, myself included. I am quoted in that story. It's about basically what it's like to be a wrestling fan in the year 2012. And it's a very interesting story. Daniel did a good job on that. And like I said, I'm quoted in there. So you can find the Minaret website and check that out. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. I picked up a bunch of followers over the last week or so, so I thank you for that. And again, once I go down to Miami at the end of the month for WrestleMania, I'll be doing a lot of live blogging and tweeting from Access and possibly the Hall of Fame and WrestleMania and Raw. And as it turns out, there might even be some special, some other stuff going on. I don't really want to get into that right now because it's not a done deal. But you'll definitely want to follow me on Twitter for that. Friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can subscribe to the show, as always, in iTunes. Doesn't cost you anything. And more often than not, when Podbean is working properly anyway, you are the first to get the show. Whenever it gets posted, it goes to iTunes. You don't have to worry about downloading it. When's it posted? It'll be there for you. So subscribe in iTunes. Find me on YouTube as well. My username on there is TheSolomonster, all one word. And that's going to do it for this week, episode 208. So I want to thank each and every one of you for being part of the podcast and spreading the good word. We've picked up a lot of listeners recently, but we need more. We want more. I welcome new listeners. And if you are a new listener, by the way, don't be shy. Write in. Let me know that you are, in fact, listening to the show, what you like about it, what you don't. I always want to hear from you guys. So until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll be right back here next week for episode 209. Until then, take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.